temporarily linked together by a common thread, a black aesthetic, as an attempt to interrogate what constitutes black expression. Mangoba featured as one of the prominent figures in not only the narrative of what the exhibition referred to as the early black modernists, alongside Jarrell Sekoto and George Pemba. But the exhibition thus sought to not only explore the expressive modes of these artists in relation to the term of early black modernists, but in Mangoba's case, it became necessary to probe his contribution to the modernist question through his participation in both black artistic expression and the Western art canon. The modernist question, of course, being who does modernity belong to? However, this paper suspends this question and curatorial rationale of including Mangoba's work in the exhibition and seeks to rather elaborate on his artistic repertoire in relation to his positionality within the black expressive modes and the extent to which, returning to some of his ideas, evokes questions around African spirituality, particularly what it could mean in relation to art. Through his exploration, I argue that while these ideas were guided by Mangoba's interest in how art connects to spirituality and ancestry, they also connected him to a larger purpose beyond art making, and what I suggest was a means of defining art as a universal language. Mangoba, I suggest, thus advocated for this universal art language through not only his expressive mode of drawing from traditional African art forms, but also in his use of reoccurring motifs in his work, an approach I propose is centered on an exploration of humanness in relation to the material and spiritual world. So this paper is a shortened version of a longer paper that I'm trying to develop and explore the work of Mangoba, amongst others, in relation to art and spirituality, specifically African spirituality. And although this term, I haven't quite defined it yet, what does African spirituality mean? I suggest that it forms part of an exploration through which Mangoba's work could be accessed. Whilst not defined, it is suggested that African spirituality does not necessarily differ from spiritualism as understood through terms of religious connotations interpreted through Christianity, Buddhism, or Islam, or Judaism, or any other religious belief system, for that matter, but rather that there is a claim for its characteristics as distinctly different through the notion of being African, and how this resonates with what Sylvia Winter's idea on being human as a praxis. I'd like to briefly draw on this praxis as it best articulates how Mangoba's work and practice holds the possibility of undoing and unsettling and not replacing or occupying Western conceptions of what it means to be human. In an anthology of essays on Sylvia Winter, Catherine McKittrick shares a set of ideas that bring to the fore how Winter's anti-colonial vision, an innovative approach to thinking through ways in which we live and tell our stories. Winter's analytical ideas, she notes, have resulted in an intellectual over that, and I quote, patiently attends to ways in which our specific conception of the human, man, curtails alternative models of being, the fullness of our interrelated human relation, and a new science of human discourse. The anthology does not only offer the way we might read Winter, but also draws attention to new stories of being human as articulated through her intellectual work. Winter's concerns are about the ways in which the figure of the human is tied to epistemological histories that presently value a genre of the human that rarefies Western bourgeoisie tenets. And this can in some sense be likened to Mangoba's emphasis on being human and therefore humanness. Like Winters's words, I'd like to suggest that Mangoba's brushstrokes, which are even finger strokes at some points, I think, offer a different origin narrative possibility. The yours in intellectual struggle, which McKittrick points out that Winters often closed her letters with, inspires a world that imagines change that is not teleological, as in moving from colonial oppression outwards and upwards towards emancipation, but rather consists of knots of ideas and histories and narratives that can only be legible in relation to one another. the yours in intellectual struggle, McKeetrick states, bears witness to the practice of sharing words and letters while also drawing attention to the possibilities that storytelling and wording bring. It is in this interrelatedness I would like to reiterate Bridget Thompson's insights on Mangoba's work and practice as projecting similar knots of ideas and histories embodied through his appreciation of ancient cultures and African art, and how these roots, how these have been rooted in his own life history and story. Mangoba was born to Christian parents on the 29th of August 1904 in Turfontein, an area on the outskirts of Johannesburg Central. His father, Ivan Mangoba, was an evangelist in the Presbyterian Church and also worked on the Comet Gold Mine in Boksburg. His mother, Florence, was an Anglican Christian and probably had the most influence on him and how his artistic being was shaped, developed, and evolved over the 90 years of his artistic practice. There are different anecdotal moments that Mangoba refers to that suggest this, and the most poignant being one he seems to have carried throughout his life and sense of being. His declaration that my people are the people of the world, and I quote, and this is from an interview with Bridget Thompson, is based on his mother's teachings of humanity, Ubuntu in other words, an insistence that he would find intellectual stimulation and appreciation beyond the confines of an oppressive and stifling surrounding that South Africa was becoming. In the exhibition, Ernest Mangoba featured prominently as a central figure through these influences and ideas in not only how he was curatorially placed within the overall display and narrative of the Black modernist art. And I'll try and elaborate on this and what it means, this idea of Black modernisms. But also more importantly, in his sensitivity to expression of a universal language of art and art making and even art thinking. There are two strands that I will therefore like to speak to in relation to his inclusion in the exhibition. The first is the fact that one cannot discuss South African Black modernist art without at some point mentioning or referring to Mangoba's art and life story, and more specifically, his articulation of this story and how it is captured in his artwork and a visceral expressive language. The second strand is based on a broader notion of the universal, which is perhaps a more philosophical question of how and why art is in Mangoba's creative life centered as not just part of, but also an extension of humanity and humanness. The idea of the universal is thus here not used in a generalized sense, but rather in opposition to the socio-economic political understanding of what art that tends to emphasize it as something distinctly different or separate from the experiences it evokes. Mangoba's inclusion in the Black Aesthetic exhibition is thus not only because of how his work gives an account of his life experience, but also his artistic repertoire and how the five works that you see here were placed. These works were also an attempt at giving a glimpse of, if not mapping his extensive oeuvre, and beginning with the sculpture, the African Madonna, which is sometimes referred to as, the Bantu Madonna. The African Madonna does not only demonstrate his talent as a sculptor, but also signifies his training in missionary schooling, which played an important role in his artistic trajectory. Mangoba completed his junior certificate as Grace Dieu in 1920. The African Madonna sculpture was sculptured from observing a Black model and created for Sister Pauline's Chapel of St. Mary's thatch roof rendezvous. When speaking about it, Mangoba later revealed that in rendering the work, he was not interested in portraying a specific person, but that he was trying to sculpt an image of awakening womanhood. It is said that he also finished the sculpture in 10 days. A few years later, in 1932, Mangoba executed a teak sculpture of St. Augustine of Canterbury, and a commission for which was a commission for the Church of St. Augustine in Kent in England, which may still sit in the church today. Thereafter, he completed several other sculptures, including two versions of the Mater Christi, Latin for Mother of Christ, and the Future Africa, also called Africa to Be, which is these works here. Future Africa was modeled on a portrait of his younger brother Ronnie and a friend. The sculpture later won him a first prize award. Oh, it's getting spiritual now, you see. The sculpture later won him a first prize award in the May Esther Bedford competition at Fort Hare, then known as the Native College of South Africa. And the inclusion of African Madonna in the exhibition thus was to illustrate how the church, religion, and spirituality played a significant role in Mangoba's introduction to art and how it would eventually evolve into a more of a spiritual calling. The work thus acts as both an attempt at extending Mangoba's language of art making, but in the context of the other four works featured in the exhibition, all broadly kind of depicted what I suggest added to the spirit embodied in the overall exhibition. His painting, Les Ancestres, I argue, stands as symbolic of Mangoba's own philosophical assertions of undoing the impasse between European or Western impositions on African belief systems and ways of being human. In relation to it, he states that the artist of today is isolated in spite of himself because he's in search of spiritual integrity within a society that is all devoted to the satisfaction of material needs as its first priority. Mangoba further elaborates on this, stating that he, as in the artist, is in harmony across space and time with the ancient world and the artists in his awareness that the spiritual and material values have to be reconciled. The reconciliation of the spiritual and material is therefore the nexus, I argue, is critical in assigning a new meaning to Reedy Mangoba and other artists featured in the exhibition. As reference to spirituality, African spirituality in particular, their work offers a moment to temporarily suspend the curatorial aspects of making sense of it within a particular rubric or theme, and rather reflect upon what it means as a visual reference that represents tensions between the spiritual and material world. In discussing Les Ancestres, I note the error, which by the way I was crucified for, in having placed it in the catalog in a landscape format as opposed to the portrait which he probably painted it in. But I think for me, it then started to offer what I call a happy accident in art, which changes its reading somewhat. The reading of Les Ancestres in a landscape format, as opposed to a portrait figure, presents an opportunity to read the work through a prism that starts to resituate it, and how one looks at it, but also how one could re-inscribe Mangoba as not only a formidable black modernist artist living in exile in Europe at the time, while at the same time claiming himself as a true modernist subject. The work in its landscape format, I suggest, carries a spiritual connection to the land, not only in its use of a particular palette, but also in its link to a past, present, and future of his life story, and the black modernist art discourse it incited through its titling. In other words, as a black African and modernist artist, Mangoba's art and intellectual practice offers an entry point to interrogate a worldview of not only being a modern African subject at an avant-garde moment in art history, but also living through the politics that question the philosophical question of what it means to be black and a human in the world. It is an assertion which I'd like to think has really little to do with the idea that black artists and their art should be read in their own terms instead of comparing them or including them into a Western modernist canon, but rather proposes a more critical engagement with the artwork and the possibilities it offers to expand readings of these artists and their artworks. In Mangoba's Le Ancestre, there's a case for its centrality to the narrative of the curatorial inscription of the exhibition in not only its use of the reoccurring motif of the singular figure that features in his work, but also its insistence to his ancestral links to African art and his home through an array of brushstrokes and gestures typifying a landscape treatment that poses the land question. In an interview with Bridget Thompson, he notes that Mangoba described the work as a tribute to an ancestor whose sacrifice enabled a whole group to escape the dictatorship imposed by King Shaka Zulu. She further notes that this historical connection was important to Mangoba because at the time he understood what drove Shaka to forcibly bring the nation together to fight colonialism. And a close reading of this painting reveals it as a powerful statement against supremacy imbued with references to history of land dispossession in South Africa. Mangoba's Le Ancestre is an entry point to begin to discuss and interrogate how Black modernist art as thought through a larger theme of Black cultural traditions and in relation to the Black lived experience is also integrally linked to the loss of spiritual power. In the 1950s, as apartheid was gradually taking shape of its policies and how it would implement these into every aspect of native life, the missionary schools increasingly became an important space that did not only offer education opportunities in the form of taking up teaching or nursing, but also in other vocations such as carpentry or wood carving, weaving, textile production, and of course art. However, in the visual arts space, the organization of apartheid along racial and spatial lines in a society such as South Africa presented a predicament in determining a prescriptive linear narrative and meaning of art in society, which Mangoba's life story and art complicates in various ways. When considered in relation to the historical links between the visual arts narrative of South Africa and its socio-political condition in as far as its artists, Black artists in particular, there is a discrepancy in how he and others featured and were incorporated into the larger narrative or the larger national historical narrative. While one could argue that the visual arts narrative has over the past two decades expanded, on the other hand, it has narrowed down as it presents a clear delineation of how visual art has been considered in South Africa, and more so through a political lens than in its role in society, and more importantly in terms of Black artists and what they were preoccupied with. This has also been made less obvious by the appearance of a thriving visual arts cultural scene that since 1994 has somewhat opened the South African art market to the international arena. However, this art market is also conflated with discrepancies of historical imbalance of apartheid's favorability towards Western ideas, which continue to permeate in certain corners of some national art institutions. In concluding, it is therefore important to note that during Mangoba's time in South Africa, art featured as part of the expanded Bantu education syllabus through the teachings of books such as Arts and Crafts from Africans, published in 1953, and Art of Africa, published in 1958. And in Arts and Crafts for Africans, the aim was to provide, and I quote, a resource that would guide Africans to the useful precedents of African attainment, to reawaken the joyful attitude that the authors such as Jack Grossert claimed had prompted artistic intervention in the past. For Grossert and his white contemporaries, African art played a pivotal role as a profound political statement in man's pursuit of beauty and the role of art in creativity in modern society. However, Grossert and others premised this on an anthropological study of African life by looking at forms such as drawings of crawls and murals on huts, which they described in a manner that appreciated African art, not only for its simplicity of its form and its essential accomplishment of its design, but also for social values they read into the objects, such as harmony, unity, and beauty. In other words, traits that many moderns found lacking in their own day-to-day lives. This statement is not only exemplary of the kinds of attitudes conveyed by the particular kind of thinking that led Mangoba to seek it some, well, to seek inspiration elsewhere. As noted by Max Zenia, since the 1910s and especially in the 1920s, African art has been levied as a critique against the excesses of industrial society. So conscripted, African art was profoundly political. Its politicization, I argue, did not only distill the practices of artists such as Mangoba, but also later created one of the richest channels to interrogate the question of how art is in many ways a culmination of politics told with poetry and philosophy. The poetic is expressed through the precarious lives of black artists such as Mangoba, who lived as not only exiled personalities, but were also creative intellectuals responding to a moment galvanized by colonial conquest in every aspect of African life. It is worth noting that by the time Mangoba left Europe, he was already 34 years old. Okay, I'm wrapping up. It is therefore possible to propose that by then he had not only formulated particular ideas about art, or should, what art is or should be, but also had particular ideas about its role, especially with regards to how it reflected human insight and initiative. In Les Ancestres, Mangoba renders the singular figure almost invisible, disappearing into the background and yet equally appearing in the foreground of the picture plane. The crude gestures of paint around the figure are as much a part of the picture plane as the figure disguised in the image. The figure is based on a study from an African art figurine and reoccurs regularly in Mangoba's repertoire as not just a representation of himself, but also himself amongst others, echoing the principle of Ubuntu once again. While the context in the context of the exhibition, it may be read as a self-portrait, it also stands as a symbol of man amidst a chaotic world. But it also stands as a representation of Mangoba as a world citizen, which was key to his pursuit of being an artist and him eventually leaving South Africa. In that respect of making a life decision, Mangoba is also intentional with his choice of color in this work and all other works, and his use of burnt siennas, ochres, and olive greens as a reference to a particular landscape, a South African landscape. Its title is not only a reference to his connection to a spiritual past, but also a denotation to a present African spirituality that I'm suggesting offers a new meaning. This new meaning, I argue, is also critical to note in relation to the fact that Mangoba hardly titled his work, and as a result, this work stands as an anomaly with such a title. Most of his works were either descriptive, such as drawing or a sketch, in most cases untitled. The work thus presents an opportunity to read and be repositioned in relation to its association to the modernist outline, but also a personal association to South African context, that when a visual analysis engages further, it allows a better understanding of the visual elements and the historical context from which it was produced. Most importantly, it allows for a pedagogical approach to Mangoba's art and art making in relation to the shaping of a South African and African visual art language.